بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. In the name of God, most compassionate, most merciful. Kia ora, good evening, shalom, and assalamu alaikum. First of all, on behalf of the Muslim community, we'd like to thank the organizers of this function to invite us here and to share with you our perspective on the binding of Isaac. You can see from the title it says binding of Isaac or Ismail, and this is the one difference between the Muslim and the Jewish and the Christian perspective, where we say the son who was involved in this episode was Ismail, more from the Islamic tradition point of view than from the Quran. The Quran itself doesn't give the name of the son, but talks about the incidents. Like the Jewish and the Christian community, the event, the son, and what is happening to the son is not greatly emphasized in the teachings of Islam, but it is more to do with Ibrahim or Abraham that has got a greater link with Islam. And the sacrifice that Ibrahim did for his son is looked from an Islamic perspective as being the culmination of his sacrifice for God, which started from his early days, even when he was teens. The Quran tells us that Ibrahim used his father and his community were idol worshippers, and he used to see this idol worshipping going around him, but something that he rejected, he denied. And his first sacrifice was for the oneness of God, was that everybody should worship one God. And it came to a time when people had a festival in the village or in the community. He went into the temple or whatever they used to call it, and decided to break all the idols. This led to Ibrahim being expelled from his nation because of his action. In those days, of course, idols were everything. You know, somebody coming and breaking the idols means the great curse of God is going to come in the community, and all that kind of superstition that were there. So he was expelled. First of all, they tried to kill him. They tried to put him in a fire and burn him. And according to the Islamic teachings, he was actually put in the fire, but here God was there to show his powers. So he commanded the fire to be cool and comfortable for Ibrahim. And Ibrahim stayed in this fire for a while. Everything around him was burning. The firewood was burning, but the fire was a nice and comfortable place for Ibrahim. And from an Islamic perspective, we are saying that here God is showing us his power, that everything is in his control. Even the natural things that he has actually created, for example, a fire is burning, is in his control. It burns when he wants it to burn, and it cannot burn whom he doesn't want it to burn. So this is where the sacrifice of Abraham starts. And then from then on he moves, and from an Islamic perspective, He left one of his wives by the name of Hajra. So it's not Sarah, but Hajra, who happens to be the mother of Ishmael, in the place which is now called Makkah. This is in Saudi Arabia. And many of you would have heard Makkah, and to most of non-Muslims, for example, Makkah is associated with the Prophet of Islam and the history of Islam, I mean, the Prophet of Islam, this Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, and the history of Islam. But to the Muslims, Makkah is actually linked with Prophet Ibrahim. And now is a good time to have this discussion, because we are actually less than 1 month away from the events in Makkah, which is called the Hajj, the pilgrimage in Makkah. The pilgrimage in Makkah has got a very strong link with Prophet Ibrahim, including the sacrifice that Prophet did. So I'll go through a little bit about some of the events, some of the activities that we do during the pilgrimage of Mecca, and how it is linked to the life of Ibrahim. Because this is where the connection between Islamic activities and Prophet Ibrahim, Ismail and Isaac are related. As I said before, Ismail, in the Islamic thing, Ismail and his son Isaac, his brother or stepbrother Isaac, don't play a very important role, except that they became prophets of God. They were people who had great piety and a great connection with God, and they are supposed to be model for us to follow. But the main person in this is Ibrahim. So in the Hajj itself is done in a place in a mosque which is called the Kaaba and the Masjid Haram. The Kaaba, if most of you have seen the Kaaba, is the black structure which is in the center of the mosque. Now, that structure, from the Islamic point of view, was actually built by Ibrahim. Not the present structure we see there today, obviously, but the first structure there was actually constructed by Ibrahim as a place for the worship of God, for the worship of one God. And so this is where we go, and many of the actions that we do when we go there for the pilgrimage are actually remnants of the actions of that Ibrahim and his wife Hajra and Ismail performed in that locality. So the first one is going around the Tawaf. This is called Tawaf, which is going around the Kaaba. It is one of the central things. Whenever we go, we do a worship that is going around the Kaaba. This here is just walking around and praying. But what is actually symbolizing to us is that walking around, praying, and the sacrifice that Ibrahim did to get close to God, for his religion, for his willingness to obey God, as the rabbi put it. And the other one of the worships we do is actually a walking between two small hills. They're about 700-800 meters apart. Now this walking between the hill is again going back to what Ibrahim's wife Hajra did when she was left at Mecca. Just a missed point that when Ibrahim left them at Mecca, he was supposed to go, and he left them there and then he went. He left them there and he left and went. So he gave them a little bit of food and water. And when he was going away, Hajra asked her, "Why are you doing this? This is a barren place. There's no shelter. There was no locality, no settlement whatsoever. Just a barren place." And he was quiet. Ibrahim did not say anything. So she asked him, "Is this from God?" And he indicated, "Yes, this is from God." But he did not say it. And she said, "If this is from God, you go. He'll look after me." And so this was when the provisions he had expired, finished, she started to run around looking for somebody to go and see where we can get some more provisions from. At that stage, according to the Islamic perspective, Ismail was a baby. So he was not age where he could be moving. He was left near the Mecca, which is now inside the mosque, but very close to the place where Ibrahim said is going to be your place for prayer. And so while she was running this between these hillocks, between these two hills, the angel came, the angel Jibrail, or angel Gabriel came, and he got a fountain that started to come out from where the heels of Ismail were hitting the ground. And this fountain still exists. This is called the Zamzam, a very, very well-known well, which is in the mosque. It's inside, and it comes, and people from all over the world, up till now, will go there and will drink as much as we want. And we bring back the water. It's been going on for centuries. Millions of people are doing it, but it's not running out of water. So that fountain is there. It's just amazing. And it's a very nice water to drink, so everybody loves it. So, and everybody who goes to Mecca brings it back, so we go to their house and drink it. So while she was running between the two mountains, this again is something that we enact there. Obviously, when we are doing it, we are praising, we are asking God for His, we're doing prayers, we're reciting certain prayers, ways of praise, remembrance of God while doing it. But the action itself, the actual physical action, if you like, is an enactment of what they did, and spiritually we are integrating it with prayers. So this is the thing that happens within Mecca itself. Now Hajj itself is, Hajj has got other aspects which are outside Mecca, which is a place, there's a place called Mina. Mina is about maybe 5 km, maybe 5 miles, I'm not sure, around the town. It's not very far from Mecca. The sacrifice that we were talking about from an Islamic perspective actually happened in Mina. So in Mecca, the Ibrahim started to have dreams that he is sacrificing his son. When he started to have these dreams, and it was coming continuously on a daily basis, then he actually spoke to his wife, his son. His son was about 15, that, not 15. He is described as being in his teens. And so in his teens, and also what we call religiously mature, which means about 15, 16, that kind of age. Is when somebody becomes mature from a religious point of view. So Ibrahim actually discussed this with his son, and he said, "I'm having this dream that I'm sacrificing you." And Ibrahim's reply is that, "O father, do what you are commanded to do." Notice that he's not saying do what you're dreaming. Do what you are commanded to do, and inshallah, or God willing, you will find me among the patients. So when the command came to go and sacrifice Ibrahim, and again, as we had before, the command, at that time Ibrahim actually did not know that this was a test. But so the command came for him to go and sacrifice his son. So he and his son, the son was ready for this. The both of them, they walked. They walked to the place called Mina, as we described before. On the way to Mina, within Mina itself, before they went to reach the place at their place of sacrifice, the Satan, whom we call Shaitan, the Satan came to Ibrahim and said, "What are you doing? This is crazy. This is not a command of God. It is something that is a product of your mind," because the shaitan knew the faith of Ibrahim, and it wasn't that don't do it, don't disobey God, but he was trying to say this is not what God wants you to do, don't do it, because he wanted to get in that way. And so Ibrahim, he chased the shaitan away, he chased him away, and then he came again and he chased him away, and he came the third time and he chased him again away. So this is another aspect of Hajj that we do. And now the locations where these events happened, as they are pillars. We call them the three pillars. And many of you must have heard about this, that one of the rites of Hajj is the stoning of the pillars. And this is linked with this Ibrahim rejecting the temptations of the shaitan. So when we actually go and stone the pillars, that's what I say, we are rejecting the temptations of the devil and the temptations of the dunya, the worldly temptations. And so, after the third time, they reached the destination where the sacrifice was supposed to take place. And from an Islamic perspective, there was no binding because Ismail was willing. He was willing because he knew this is what God wanted him to do. So, but when Ibrahim started to do the sacrifice, he found that his hand could not move. His hand was could not move, and then pull it up again. But when he's trying to catch it, it doesn't move. And then after two or three tries, he hears, and from a Islamic perspective, it's God talking to him directly, saying, "Oh Ibrahim, that you have fulfilled your command. That indeed this was you have fulfilled their command. Indeed this was a very great trial for you. You have passed." And the reward for this is that your son is not going to be sacrificed, but he has a lamb. And an angel brings a lamb to Ibrahim, and then this lamb is sacrificed by Ibrahim. So connected with the Hajj, and in fact connected with all the Muslims at the time of Hajj, is the sacrifice of this lamb. That in many Muslim countries, either a family or even individuals who can afford it, they will do the sacrifice of this lamb. That is to remember the great sacrifice of Ibrahim and what impact it has got in our life. What it means to us is that the sacrifice of the lamb represents the sacrifice of the animal instinct in us that comes as a boundary between us and our service to God, as our submission to God. So that sacrifice that we are doing, or Ibrahim did was that he showed that, you know, all human desires, all human instincts, all human bonds and loves and all these things, they if we put them away for the sake of God, we are not going to lose them. You know, he was prepared to put his son to kill his son for the sake of God. Now, one of the things that, you know, this is a story that we hear from every festival. This is a story that is narrated from the mosque from the very beginning. So it's every year we hear this story. And one of the things I heard our teacher in Fiji say, this is when we were about 7 or 8 years old, he said, which of you would be prepared to be like Ismail and say, yes, I'm ready to sacrifice myself? And then he says, ask your parents, which of your father would be like Ibrahim and say, yes, I'll sacrifice myself. So you can see, and I think it was expressed by the two speakers before, that this was not an easy task for anybody to do, to go and say, yes, I'll sacrifice his son. But and that is actually very distinctly rooted in the Islamic philosophy, especially today when we live in a world of materialism, that we might think that it will be very hard for us to forego our material instincts, our desires, and all these things for the sake of God. And this festival here comes and reminds us that no, Ibrahim could do it. The way to get to God, the way to get closeness to God, the way to get to higher status and higher recognition from God is to follow this way. Indeed, he is, like we said, a model for us to follow. And so this is the link between us, the festival of sacrifice, which is celebrated by Muslims all over the world, and it is also done in Mecca. So in Mecca, during the performance of the Hajj, this sacrifice is done by most of the people who are performing the Hajj as a remembrance of what Ibrahim did. So here's a great link. Here's the link between Prophet Ibrahim and Hajj. And you can say that most of the physical action of Hajj is actually replicating the physical actions of Prophet Ibrahim. Ibrahim. And in there is, of course, embedded some of the things that happened with Ismail, where it's part of the sacrifice. And I talk briefly about what this sacrifice means to the Muslims. There are two other...
Make it brief?
Okay. There's two things. One is that the first mention of sacrifice in the Quran was the sacrifice that was given by the two sons of Adam when they had a dispute between themselves. And they said, okay, to resolve the dispute, we'll give sacrifice. The sacrifice of one was accepted and the sacrifice of the other one was not accepted. Now, the one whose sacrifice was accepted, he said to the other one, your sacrifice is not accepted because God only accepts a sacrifice that is done with God consciousness, what we call taqwa, with piety. You've got to give something to God with piety. And this is one of the things that sacrifice says to them, that our worship, our devotion has got to get that inner piety in us. So that's one. The other one that we've talked about is submission and getting closer to God with submission, and the previous speakers spoke about that. And the third one from an Islamic perspective is that sacrificing is a way of actually controlling our desires and what we call the tarbiyah, training ourselves, especially training our heart, so that we can open it to submission to God. And a lot of Muslims practice this, not only just doing the sacrifice of an animal, but for example, eat a little bit food, go through a period where you eat a little bit less food, for example, just to kill your internal desires or to weaken your internal desires. So these are the three aspects of sacrifice that are very, distinctly and strongly related to our everyday Islamic way of life. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Hazrat, and thank you.